Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Welcome to Geek Week.
Geek Week.
Did I say that out loud?
Oh, my gosh.
That didn't take long.
What an introduction to our IT department at Premier Ag.
I meant that in a loving way, guys.
You know these guys control our lives.
I know.
Good luck with your phone,
I'll have a blue screen
iPad,
of death
computer.
Just as soon as we leave here.
You know what they say about paybacks.
They're bad.
Yeah, they're bad.
Well, with us today is James Driscoll. Welcome.
Nice to be
long
here.
Long time listener, first time joiner, I think so. Yep. And Matt, you've been with us before, Matt Persinger.
Yeah.
You've been on here before. Very popular episode last time we talked about some of this stuff. So cybersecurity and things. But before we get into that, we have to do the question of the day. And Matt, we'll let you go first. Work around the table here. So Matt, tell us just an easy one. This is like an underhand. This is like a high hanging curveball. What's some of your hobbies and pastimes outside of work?
It's funny thinking about that, how they change over the years. But right now, with grandkids and everything, our focus is on them. We do a lot with them.
What ages?
So I got a 2-year-old grandson and a almost five-month.
Oh, wow. They're little.
And one on the way.
Up.
So, but we do a lot with those guys. And on the weekends, we take Jeep rides. And we do a lot, my wife and I do a lot of traveling. And but as far as a hobby that I've done for most of my life, even since I was a little kid, I've had a metal detector for probably since I was 10 years old.
Really?
Yeah. Love taking that thing out and just seeing what you can find. So I do that not as much as I'd like, but as often as I can.
Well, you got to tell us, what any treasure or anything like that you found?
Nothing of big value
old,
or anything.
Old Miller Lite cans?
Well, those are mostly probably mine, but
Well, no, another pastime.
Yeah. Something to relieve the stress of, you know, being a premier IT person. Yeah. But no, some pretty cool old timer pocket knives.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are fun to find. Hey. So, but yeah.
You have like specific area, the beach, obviously, but is there other?
Yeah, I like to go to city parks.
Parks.
Yeah, yeah. And that sort of thing. And then try to find some old farm ground or something that's probably not been hunted on. Get permissions, of course, and then go and see what you can find. So, the cool thing is, you know, everything you find has got some sort of history and you wonder how it got there. That's the kind of the cool thing for
Neat.
Me. So, yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Well, Matt, what do you do in your spare time? I mean, James, what are you doing in your spare time? We got Matt.
Well, right now, keeping up with a soon-to-be 11-month-old, she keeps us on our toes. Do a lot of fall and spring festivals, travel around the state to those. Really enjoy those with the family. And then woodworking. I do some woodworking when I can get some time to myself and do some different projects.
Neat. So cabinets, has she found the cabinets yet?
Yes. Within probably the last 2 weeks, she really enjoyed them. And then I was the mean one to put the locks on the doors and she lets us know that they're still locked every night.
Well, you're a fun hater.
Yeah.
Of course, grandparents, they don't have to, you don't correct them at all. Do you just let them run free?
Oh, it's different. That's for sure.
Yep. Amen.
I bet I know what yours is, Jeff, but won't you share?
Matt's, he literally stole my answer.
Yes.
I have it down here, and it's like we've entered that grandkid, mm-hmm. you know, phase of life, and you're right. It is different. So we like spending time with them and stuff, but, you know, I still have a few cows I like to mess with, so still playing with some livestock and chasing grandkids around, going to their stuff, so it's fun times.
It is. Well, mine's completely different.
Let me guess, backhoe.
Yeah, I've got, I should have had a bigger sandbox when I was a kid because I sold my excavator to help fund this new shop I built. So I've just got a backhoe and a skid steer now and some other tractors and things. But I'd like to get another excavator, so I kind of miss it already and traded my dozer, so I need to get one of those back. But yeah, I like heavy equipment and running it and just pushing trees down or digging up stumps or something. Nobody comes and bothers you. It is so peaceful out there when you're on one of those.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, back to work. So this is one of the most critical parts. I got to imagine when you guys go to like Thanksgiving and Christmas, how many people just like come up to you and say, fix this phone or none of this works?
There's one of my favorite t-shirts I've seen people says, yes, I'm an IT guy. No, I won't fix your computer. But you're right. That does happen for sure. Yeah.
So tell us about the IT department of Premier Ag. I mean, you guys are a big part of it. How many folks are in that department and tell us what you all do all day besides fix everything.
Currently we are sitting at 4 members, including myself. And I don't think there's a single day that's the same. Every day is kind of off the cuff and no routine. We never know what new adventures lie ahead.
Worst case scenario, something big quits, right?
Yep.
It just happened.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, we had a router failure at our major software Spire, and it's too late in the day to overnight one. So jumped on an airplane and flew up there and took care of it and flew back that next afternoon. So that's the extreme.
Oh my gosh. Right. That's like CIA. That's like movie stuff there. Yeah. Going into.
Yeah. But it had to be done or the company would have been down for the next day probably. So we didn't want that to happen. So,
no. Wow.
So yeah, that's the extreme. But in most of our day, our guys are monitoring the ticket queue, trying to resolve issues that have come in from everywhere. So we have the ability to pretty much 97 or 98% of the stuff we can fix from here, remotely from wherever we are and wherever the situation is. So makes it nice.
And that's the email, because you kind of get in line, right? We email in a problem and then one of y'all, is there a secret to like getting to the front of the line? Is there like a code? We'll come up with one later.
Yeah. Well, if your name's Harold Cooper, that usually takes care of it.
Great. So. I'll start putting on mine.
Yeah, Harold told me to call. Checks.
Yeah. We triage them best we can based on, you know, common sense things for us, you know, what seems to be a major issue, what's affecting more than one person, you know, those type of things that, so we do triage them a little bit. So
it's amazing that we go to all of our branches or wherever else and all of our stuff works. Oh, I think this is pretty crazy.
I pulled into the junction, one of our C stores the other day, and I needed to log on and set up some load numbers. And I pulled up, got my laptop out, and I was going to find a hotspot on my phone. And I looked over and I realized my email was populating. And I thought, we've got Wi-Fi. I'm automatically connected at the junction. I sat there and did that, got some load numbers sent out to a customer, and it's back rolling. And so thank you guys.
Yeah, that makes it nice.
Yeah, that was very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Before we get into something serious, Jeff and I were talking. You guys have got to have some frequent flyers in the company, people that, now, if it's one of us, don't say it, but
yeah, throw somebody under the
bus.
Yeah,
let's throw somebody. Do you got some people that call more than others?
Yeah.
I'll echo. Yeah, we definitely do.
Yeah, the answer to that question is yes.
Is it the same guy that signs our checks?
No, I don't hear,
hear from really?
Him. No, really? No, not very often.
No.
All right. No, what division are they in? You can tell us that. No, you're not going to do it. The confidentiality is tight.
Yeah.
Are there HIPAA laws with the IT?
Cyber.
Cyber.
Yeah. Can't give away people's names like that.
Okay.
Well, maybe we ought to get into something serious and talk a little bit about cybersecurity. So that is a threat. That is the most critical part of what you do. So tell us a little bit about some of the cyber, I guess, what's the threats, or the, I guess, for businesses? Tell us some of that you guys are.
Yeah. In all honesty, you know, the threats that exist for businesses such as Premier or Amazon or anybody else are the same that exist for you as a personal computer user at your house. I mean, the threats are all the same. So everybody from, you know, the person sitting reading a Kindle at their house to people working at their home office or at their office all have to be vigilant about what they're doing and follow sort of some of the same principles and do some of the same things that everybody has to do. So it's not different. It's just a scale, right? You know, so a bigger company is going to be a bigger target. They get more employees, a bigger attack surface than just a single user. But really, the threats and how to mitigate against those really are the same for everybody. So it all comes down to the user. We can do we can throw all kinds of stuff at it: hardware, software, security pieces, security company. We can do all that stuff, but it comes down to the end user. It really does. And so how do you mitigate that? You educate the user. So that's we try to spend some time with that, and we have some training videos and stuff that send out, what is it, weekly now, I think. Yep. And try to educate the user and keep them on their toes a little bit, and we do some testing. You know, we send out some test emails and things to our employees to keep them on their toes, to, for one, you know, to test the end user, make sure that our education is working, and two, just to keep them vigilant. And it's amazing. Our employees do a pretty good job catching that stuff. And, you know, if we'll send out a few emails and the phone will start ringing and people are like, hey, this don't look right. And that's exactly what we want them to do, instead of just saying, eh, you know, click on this thing here and see what this is. We don't want that. Yeah. So, and on top of that, we do all of the security things. You know, we have pieces in place to try to catch the bad stuff. We have, last few years, we've replaced a lot of our firewalls and routers and that sort of thing. That's the first line of defense at each location. So we do all that as well. But the big piece is educating the end user.
Hmm. Interesting. That's what, and I've literally have friends that their kids have gone to school and they are majoring in cybersecurity, which I didn't know was a thing, but it makes sense. When it comes to cybersecurity, what keeps you up at night? Let's add this. What keeps you up at night about cybersecurity and your personal lives? That's how you stump the IT.
There you go. You can have a side conversation. See, in my ignorance, it's bliss. I just, when it comes to my cybersecurity.
I know, but they know the kind
I
of
know.
Stuff.
Yeah. You can tell the look on their faces. Yeah. They're like, oh, no.
I would think probably personally, my password index. So by all means, we don't write down passwords on sticky notes. We try to discourage
it. Never met my dad, have you?
How else will you know what they are?
Or password books. But there are some password programs out there that you can store all of your passwords in and allow them to be more complex. Probably that getting out into the wrong hands, because if they get one password, they could get into just about anything in your life.
Yeah, I think that's definitely up there. You know, from a personal standpoint, you know, I think getting my banking information, you know, I think, you know, that would be horrible from a personal standpoint. I know I have a computer at home. I rarely use it. I mean, I get enough of that at work, right? And then there's nothing on it because, you know, everything's in the cloud these days. So you do your banking online and that sort of thing. But so I guess one of my big personal concerns is that being affected. So we always want to make sure, when one of our recommendations would be anything that you use the internet and you log into it, you actually put your credentials into, you want to make sure that that company or that bank or whoever you're using is using multi-factor authentication. It's just another level to make sure that even if somebody gets your username and password, they necessarily can't just access your banking information or your account information or whatever that is without that second level of authentication. So that would be one thing I would highly recommend everybody doing, since basically everything's in a cloud these days. But yeah, I think also from a personal standpoint, but also at work, you know, I think ransomware is the big thing, and that's would be a horrible thing to have to deal with.
And ransomware is
where someone, you know, gets access to your data and basically encrypts it, which means they lock it up and you don't have access to it until you pay the fee. So that's a big thing now, a big moneymaker for criminal organizations. And that would be a nightmare. And of course, the FBI and others say don't pay the ransom. You need to be able to recreate that data, restore it, and bring it back up and on your own without paying the ransom. Because if you're just paying the ransom, you're just feeding the machine.
Yeah.
Right. So,
so that's our policy here, is we're not going to negotiate with anybody. And that's what you guys have taken measures to be able to recreate it and do all that.
Yeah. But still going to be a nightmare.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
We take every precaution, daily backups, incremental backups, offsite, scattered throughout the nation as well, for also natural disasters.
Wow.
Is one thing, having kind of data centers placed around, that way if one actually does go down, you can divert to the other side of the country if need be.
Huh. And we got that? Mm-hmm. Wow. I know. It's going on.
Starting to think we're a big deal. So.
I know. It was kind of neat how you said it, though, Matt, is that the surface area, I think you said, as far as like the more employees you have, and if somebody messes up, I mean, that can be the weak link, right? That's the person left the door unlocked.
Exactly.
How do they usually find entry? I mean, how do these hackers usually find a way into a business?
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be through email.
Through email.
Yeah. A lot of techniques, a lot of social engineering, a lot of monitoring. You know, you can get on a company's website and find out an email address for somebody, start sending them some emails and try to get them to bite. You know,
sooner or later, they click on something they shouldn't click on.
Yeah, that's the hope, right? Yeah. Jeez. Or share some information. Not necessarily clicking on a link. Obviously we don't want people doing that, but also we don't want them sharing information. So, someone can try to gain the trust of an employee or something and maybe, convince them that they're a part of an organization that really they're not.
Like I work in a different division.
Yeah. Or- hey, we need your credentials for this. Can you provide those for us so we can get in here and do our work, you know, that sort of thing. So it's some credential harvesting. What they call that is just trying to gain someone's trust so they'll share information.
Hmm.
So that's another way also.
So you, if I hear you guys right, they're using emails. So the Nigerian prince that sends me emails, Could he be fake?
There's a
lot of money involved.
There's a pretty small possibility that. Yeah.
But he said he's got $1 million for me if I can just help him.
Yeah. I can remember getting those on fax machines. Same thing.
Wow.
Yeah. I send those out in faxes.
So he's gone high tech now.
He has.
I'll tell you, it's gotten so bad. I mean, if they're not my contacts, I won't answer a phone call anymore because it's all the spammers and whatever they're called. The solicitors.
So when I'm stranded and I find a payphone and I'm calling you, you're not going to answer.
You leave a message. I'll call you back.
Okay.
But
if you find a payphone, you're doing pretty well.
That's pretty good payphone.
I just had a friend of mine call. Oh, it's been a few weeks ago now, but you know, they were on their home PC and I don't know what they were doing, but they run a farm. So, you know, this is running their farm management system and all that. And it popped on the screen that, hey, your computer's a mess and it's been compromised. Please call this number. We'll help you out. So they call.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. They call the number. And thankfully, they started getting real suspicious and hung up. But, man, that's a common one also.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, where it had got to, I tell you what, it got suspicious, and it should have got suspicious before it got to this point, but they were wanting, the person on the phone was wanting my friend to get a hold of their bank so they could transfer money to pay for their support, which.
Oh my gosh.
But that's, you know, if you're not a tech savvy person, an older person, it's easy to fall for that sort of thing. You want somebody's help, somebody's willing to help, and you trust them, and you shouldn't. And yeah. So it's just taking advantage of people, and it makes me sick.
Yeah, you'd think they would prey on businesses, but actually the low-hanging fruit is somebody that's just doesn't know, or an older person. I mean, my parents are getting, they get those spam emails and those spam mm-hmm. text messages and phone calls.
Well, you get AI calls now, you know, yep. copying your grandson's voice or.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's a thing.
Well, these guys can tell you more about it.
I actually had one call me probably 3-4 months ago. Older lady crying, kept saying, Jimmy, I've been in Iraq. And that's what my grandmother calls me.
Oh my gosh.
Sounded just like her. And I was like, she couldn't talk. She was frantic, like she would be if she was in an accident. And then a guy got on the phone, and I'm officer so-and-so. Who are you to this lady? And I was trying to figure out what was going on, because it was late. She shouldn't have been driving. And come to find out, the officer wanted money to take her home. I'm like, yeah, you can just leave her. So, but by all means, I talked to him for probably 90 seconds, 2 minutes before I could find out that, yeah, this is
total scam.
Total scam. And they used my grandmother's voice. And that was just from picking up on the AI as she's talked to other robocalls, and they've just captured the voice. And that's becoming a big thing, especially calling elderly people and pretending to be your grandson or granddaughter, that they need help. They're just preying on people.
Is this domestic, or is this like international stuff, or both, or what is it?
Yeah, I'm going to guess both.
Wow.
Some of this stuff is, you know, state funded, you know, government run from across the seas. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all to get money. So to fund other terrible things. So,
well, what can we do to not fall into, what's some of the things that we could do? So what's some defensive measures that as individuals or a business, what can we do to prevent this?
User education is number one. I mean, I think that's the number one thing is, especially like this right here, you know, James's situation, getting that out there to people and saying, this is a thing. Educating people that this kind of stuff's going on.
Yeah, don't call him Jimmy. He'll leave you by the side of the road.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
That was fun. But it's sort of the same thing, you know, what James could have done. Okay, that's my grandma. All right, I'm going to hang up. I'm going to call my grandma.
Oh.
Call her direct.
Yeah.
Let's. Same thing with getting a link in an email. It looks like it comes from your bank saying, hey, you're overdrawn. Something's wrong with your account. Click this link and let's get it fixed. No. Go to your bank and go there. Log in. If that message isn't there, it was fake. But don't click the link that was sent to you. Go to the source. Same with you get a notification of somebody said something about you on Facebook or other social media. You want to click when you see that, you're like, well, what are they talking about? I better click the link, see what's going on. No, don't do that. Go to the source instead and find out if it's legit or not. Probably not, but just don't click the link. It really comes down to trust. You know, you just can't really trust like you used to be able to. Mm. So you have to verify.
Do you feel like some of these mistakes that people make, is it, hey, I'm in a hurry, I just got to check email real quick, I just got a second, I got to go to a meeting, and it's like, oh, what do they want? They just click and be without really thinking about it.
I totally see that. I mean, we live in a fast-paced, busy society nowadays. So, and that's where they're making these emails so good-looking that if you just don't take that extra second, that you could accidentally fall for that. Just so taking that extra second and actually reviewing what you're receiving.
Be suspicious.
Yep.
The training videos, you know, it'll be like different. So like instead of UPS, it'll be like UPS.net or something or something other than com. I don't know what I'm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just change an S to five or add a additional letter in there that if you speed through it, you're not going to recognize it. It's actually taking that extra second being like, oh, that is .info or .net and not .com.
Hmm.
I think that's probably the one thing I've learned from you guys in the training. I look almost every time on anything that's just not, you know, completely normal is I look at that. You know, sometimes you have to go up there and click on their name to see what the email address is.
You're right. And
I do that almost religiously now.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed at how many it'd be some like, you know, code and then a Gmail address. Oh, so this company is sending me some code and it had a Gmail address.
Yep. Yeah. We just had that this week. One employee supposedly emailed HR wanting their bank account information changed for their payroll. And, I mean, it's a case of the person whoever sent the email had done some homework because they sent an email that looked like it was coming from an actual employee to an HR employee. So they knew who to send it to.
Wow.
But I'm going to call out names. I'll call out a name. Michelle did a great job and recognized that it didn't look right. And she caught it and sent it to us. You know, there's not a whole lot we can do, but because it was looked like it was coming from an employee. But if you click on it, a great big long email, gmail.com, wasn't coming from the employee. But that person was just hoping that she would go change the bank account information.
Sure. Oh, my God.
And that person's payroll would have started going into their account. So I guess that's one of the other things I always try to mention is, especially in a corporate environment, an email can never be the final authority for a person to take an action. There should always be a follow-up or a form that has to be completed, especially for transferring money, right? I shouldn't be able to call Sal and say, hey, pay this bill of $100,000 to so-and-so in an email. I mean, there should be another piece of conversation, another some sort of verification, a form we should fill out or something. But an email should never be the final authority to take some sort of action like that.
All right. I made two notes. Click nothing. So I got that one. And then an email should not be cannot be the final authority on something to generate a payment
take some sort of a major action. Like, yeah, it shouldn't. You should verify that somehow. There should be a process involved in that, like I said, a form or a two-way form or a two-way exchange of confirmation that, yeah, you really want me to do this. So in that case, maybe Michelle probably did get a hold of the other employee and say,
hey, yeah,
is this legit? And that's all it takes
sure.
for him to say, no, I didn't send that. Okay, now we know.
You know, we get so comfortable with all the smartphones and everything else and dealing directly with, you know, Amazons or Bass Pros or whoever online and now it's Walmart and, you know, your grocery shopping and everything else. It seems it's so casual that you don't think about the ways that, you know, your identity can get hacked.
Sure.
Wow. Pretty sobering episode.
Yeah. Like I got one more question. Especially as I think about it, because we travel a lot. So we've got our laptops, we're in airports and hotel rooms and stuff. You know, should we be going through the hotspot on our phone? Should we go ahead and trust Marriott's guest, you know, Wi-Fi? Or, you know, should I trust the Atlanta airport's Wi-Fi. What's the answer there?
I've always done the rule of thumb. I use my hotspot wherever I go.
But is it safe?
Good question. It is probably a little bit more safer than the Marriott guest Wi-Fi. Anything's comparable, but the chances of getting on your own hotspot are probably slimmer than the Marriott, where you have 100 other guests connected to it for them to sit there and just pound through some code to get to other machines. They would at least, on your hotspot, they would at least have to get into your phone, get into your passcode, find out your Wi-Fi name. So there are some more steps to make it more secure.
Huh. Yeah. A couple things on that. I would use the hotspot personally. Is it safe? No. Is it safer? Yes. The thing about public Wi-Fi, if you just have to, then you should have a VPN application on your phone or iPad, whatever, to encrypt that traffic. If you have to be on a public Wi-Fi, a couple things about public Wi-Fi. Let's just say you're at the hotel. It's broadcasting, Marriott guest Wi-Fi. Oh, that's the guest Wi-Fi for the hotel. So you get on it. You actually don't know if you're on the Marriott guest Wi-Fi because I can set up an access point and broadcast Marriott guest Wi-Fi. Just like the hotel is, I can be sitting down in the lounge or out by the pool and people are connected. I'm seeing every bit of traffic that they're generating. I can see their username and password they're putting in. They think they're on the Marriott guest Wi-Fi, but they're on mine. So you don't know if you're even connecting to the right one. That's the one thing. And the other is, even if you are connected to Marriott guest Wi-Fi, there could be somebody tech savvy enough to be listening in on that network to capture traffic and see username and passwords that you're putting in and stuff. So long story short, avoid it if you can. Use your hotspot. It's safer. If you just have to, use a VPN application where there's plenty of them out there where that traffic between you and the access point and what you're generating and everything, it's all encrypted. It's, if somebody's listening in on that network, they can't, it's gibberish. So they can't capture it.
Do we have a VPN application here at Premier?
So here, I mean,
that we could put on our phones and
we could certainly find one and recommend one.
Okay.
Yep. For sure. Probably not a bad idea.
Now there's more training we're going to need, so.
I know. Yeah. More videos.
Yeah. The hotspot feature is very nice because, I mean, it's, if you name it something that you know, when you see it pop on your iPad or your iPhone or whatever, you know it, right?
I named mine FBI surveillance band number two. So.
Of course you did.
That's original.
Yeah. But you can feel pretty good you're getting on your hotspot.
Well, there, you've got the two factor. We've got the, you guys have made it where we have two factor identification now, or multi factor. Is that what it's called? Multi factor. Yeah. So that's a pretty neat where you have to put the code in every once in a while. So, well, I am stressed out. I thought I was pretty secure in my life.
I'm pretty sure they hacked my bank account already just with that little geek comment at the beginning. Yeah. So
they would give mine back. They'd probably put money in it for me.
I was going to say, Sal's buying lunch because I'm broke.
Matt, James, anything else for the day?
No, it's been fun.
Jeff, yep, you had good questions. You probably impressed me with your IT knowledge.
Oh, it's because I'm a frequent flyer with these guys, but
yeah. That's why they wouldn't name names.
That's right. You slip them a little money. They won't, you know,
he asked his grandkids what kind of questions he has.
Well, we appreciate your department. I mean, I can't imagine what we'd do without our smartphones and our PCs and iPads, and that's our connectivity. We do so much. We do all of our work on them, and especially with Patrick and Eric, the rest of your team, and thank you for all you do.
That computer goes down, Sal cannot play solitaire, so
yeah,
it's important.
Might have to actually break out a set of guards.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The back in the Stone Ages. All right. Well, thank you for all you do. And that was another episode of the High Ground powered by Premier Companies. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.